Welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 107. Apparently this is our Nintendo Psy edition. Joining us this week we have Daniel.
Hello.
We have Martin. And we have Phil.
A donk a donk.
A donk a donk indeed.
Sorry, that's what I'm playing right now.
It's been a pretty eventful week of news if you're a certain company in the game industry. Other than that, it's really been kind of quiet for the most part, but we'll get to that in a bit. We've taken 2 weeks off. We've actually had to take two shows in the past month and a half, but that's neither here nor there. So there's a couple of games to talk about. And I think Daniel wanted to kick us off with his game.
So, a small game made by one guy called Thomas Was Alone was released on PS3 and Vita, I think, the last week, and I haven't been playing the PS3 or Vita versions because I assume they are exactly the same as PC, but I've been playing on PC because I got a free copy of him. It's a puzzle platformer, but it's very minimalist, and by minimalist I mean all the characters in the game are quadrilaterals that are different coloured, and that's it. All the levels are black and they are made of basically squares and stuff, and it's kind of an interesting game because it's one of those. I'm not one who's into these kind of games that are indie and can be seen as pretentious. So I played it because I got it for free and I thought, you know, I'll give it a chance. And I really like it actually. It's not pretentious at all. It kind of knows that it's about squares and it plays off the fact that it has the characters. When you look at them, they have no character other than what colour and size they are, and sort of uses some really good narration to separate them. So, like, there's Claire, who sees herself as, like, important because she helps everyone, because her ability is that she floats and water kills people. And then there's John, who is really proud of himself because he's really tall and he can jump really high, and he thinks he's better than everybody else, but not in a sort of arsehole-ish way. And then eventually when he finds somebody who's much smaller than him, that jumps much higher than him, he's kind of glad that he finds that. And it's very interesting. The story isn't... It's more about how the characters interact with each other than the main narrative. The main narrative can kind of be a bit confusing at the end, which is basically where anything actually happens. But, you know, it's a three-hour game. It's pretty cheap. It's free if you've got PlayStation Plus in Europe. I play it.
Of course.
I would play it, especially if you like platformers and stuff. Because it's kind of different, and it's not really pretentious about it either. It knows what it is. It knows about the scope it's going for, and it doesn't try to go any higher than that.
I actually missed that it's free for PlayStation Plus for us over here, so, and I wanted to play it for a while. I had it on my Steam wishlist, so I guess I will play it now.
Yeah, it's made by one guy called Mike Bithell, and is very good for what it is. You just need to go in with an open mind.
Okay. What about you, Phil? What have you been playing?
Well, I have a rental subscription. I currently got Dragon's Dogma: Dark Arisen, and I did not play the first version, so I just started that. Too early to make an opinion yet, but you know, it seems pretty cool. It doesn't seem like it's a Witcher or a Skyrim, but still cool nonetheless. Before that, I was playing Injustice, which is a very fun game. Story mode was solid. Seamless transition. Yeah. You know what? I wasn't feeling the story for like the first half of it, but then I came around to it. Now I'm not a big superhero guy. I like a few here and there. Like fighting games have always been my superhero stories. I've always been fascinated in, like, the origins and backgrounds of like Mortal Kombat and Tekken and all that stuff. So seeing, you know, the Ed Boon do a superhero thing, what I like about video games as a medium is that it gets me into some things that I don't generally enjoy in other mediums. Like, you know, I'm not a big fan of Game of Thrones or really Lord of the Rings or anything like that, but I love, like, Skyrim and all that stuff. So
like Game of Thrones?
Same thing with the superhero stuff. And I kind of... What's that?
How do you not hate Game of Thrones? Who doesn't hate Game of Thrones?
What's that?
I think he's saying he's not a really fan of high fantasy.
Yeah, I don't like high fantasy in real... Like, I like it better in literature and video games rather than actors acting it and seeing it in real time. And I don't like Game of Thrones just because of how horribly inconsistent it is. Like,
oh boy.
I just don't like all the the swearing and nudity. I'm like, what am I watching here? Like,
have you read the books?
I have not read the books.
They're worse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's not high fantasy at all.
Right, right. But yeah, no, Injustice is great. It's a solid fighting game. I found it a lot harder to pick a character that I like to play consistently compared to other fighting games. There just seems to... The pros and cons for each character seems to be more prevalent in this game. So I usually like to go for a defensive counter character like Smoke in the last Mortal Kombat. But the defensive characters in this one, I was like, I don't know. Like, the fluidity of the combos and special moves seem a little weird for this guy. I ended up picking Harley Quinn. She seems like the person that I was able to connect with the most and perform some awesome chains of special moves. Sorry?
Like jumping around in skimpy outfits, huh?
Yep, that too. But yeah, no, that's a solid game. Then I played a lot of Bioshock Infinite. I platinum that. I don't usually go in for getting every achievement or trophy in games anymore, but I was really passionate about Bioshock. I'm not going to talk about that too much. It's been talked about to death, but excellent. And basically, what I've done now is, I've gone on a huge retro kick. I went on eBay, spent hundreds of dollars on old consoles that I don't have. So I have like old Game Boys coming, a Dreamcast, an Atari 2600, and when those come in a couple weeks, I'm gonna go on the biggest retro rampage. It's gonna be insane.
It's much better when you don't actually have the money and you do it.
Yeah, because you can't reverse your bid. So.
Yeah. Oh, screw it. I've spent it now. Oh, well.
Yeah. Oh man, you can go into a dark hole with that stuff. I kind of went down to a dark hole myself ordering all that stuff.
Okay. Anything else?
Not right. Like, I've been dabbling in Luigi's Mansion. Like, I bought it when it came out. For some reason, I can't really get into it right now. I don't know what it is. Like, there's nothing wrong with the game. I don't know. Can't submerse myself into it in my current mindset.
But, I'm kind of in the same boat. I think more because, like, I take my 3DS with me because I'm like, okay, I'll use it at my lunch break because, you know, half an hour or whatever. And then it's kind of in code, and it's either that or I just sit out, and I'm like, you know, it's too bright. 3DS is very hard to see during the sunlight. And it doesn't help when it's a very 3D-heavy game. And then on my way back home or to work, I use my cell phone because mobile games are really great for 5 minutes or so. So they're the perfect thing to distract you on like a 30-minute commute.
Yeah, well, like, I played a lot of Fire Emblem Awakening on my commute. Basically, like, half the game. I don't know what I ended up clocking in hours, like, about 60 of it. But I played a lot of it. But yeah, I don't know. I can't get into Luigi's Mansion. It's weird. So.
I think when I spoke about this, I got it during the week. I was up to, like, I finished the first chapter. Now I'm up to like chapter 2-2. So it hasn't been much progress in a month since it's come out.
I'll get into it eventually. I'll do it at some point.
Yeah. What about you, Martin? What have you been playing?
I'm not quite sure what have I been playing. Oh, right. Fire Emblem Awakening is basically mostly what I've been playing. I think I spent like 10 hours with it so far, and I really like it. I mean, I liked Fire Emblem before, but this is a really good one, I think.
And,
for some reason, I really enjoy hooking up my characters with each other, which is weird. I know.
yeah, no, that's one of the most engaging parts of that game is all the matchmaking. That's really cool stuff.
Yeah, and for some reason, it's not just the matchmaking and the dialogue that ensues between those characters, but also then the revelation what kid those guys will have in the future. That's kind of interesting. Because I just got Frederick's kid with the dancer. What's her name again? I don't remember right now. But I met the guy, and it's kind of hilarious. Because he's a total slacker. Which is funny if you know Frederick.
Yeah, do you plan to use Frederick? Like later on?
I am of opinion that he kind of makes the game easy.
He didn't rely
too much on him, but I'm at chapter 17 or 18, and he's still a beast.
He becomes an experience sponge later on. Like, he just, like, barely levels at some point in the game. And
I already have him at maximum.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So.
Oh, wow. 10 hours, you said you've been playing it?
Yeah, about.
Max level for... Okay, nice.
Yeah, but it's a great game. I'm really, really happy with it. I also got it with the Limited Edition XL, which we have here in Europe, which is also kind of nice-looking system, I think.
You haven't changed jobs with him yet, though, I guess, right? You just got to 20.
No.
Yeah.
I will just say this much, just as a random tangent or aside. Somebody pointed out that there's been something like 48 special edition 3DSs since it's launched.
That doesn't surprise me.
It probably doesn't, but that's still insane. It's been, what, 2 years?
Yeah. It's got to catch up to the legacy that the DS had, remember?
At this point, every major game, not even every major game, every game Nintendo releases gets a special edition in Japan. But, go on, Martin, sorry about that.
I don't know what else to say. Alright, I can talk about maybe a bit about Harmonite, which I also got from the eShop, one of the few things I will be probably getting from the eShop. And I really like it, because it basically is Space Channel 5. Not the whole game is like Space Channel 5, but all the boss fights. I don't know how many of you played that game, but there you had like... It's this combination of music and memory stuff.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to do things in the rhythm. So in Space Channel you had to shoot or... I don't know what else, called duck, I think, in the rhythm and in specific order. And in Harmonite, it kind of was the same with jumping and hitting during the boss fight, so that's really fun. Plus, they have these side-scrolling levels where you have...
Looks awesome. Like, I'm in for anything rhythm. I'll probably buy that pretty soon.
Yeah, and so it also seems to have quite a bit of content for the money, I think. So I'm not through yet, and... apparently you have like two versions of every level, like the normal and the fast one, and I think I have also read that there's some really hard post-game content. Also, the game is made by Game Freak, who make the Pokemon games, so there are...
So they
stuff.
Can make games on Pokemon.
Yeah.
I mean, if they made one other game that wasn't Pokemon, come on.
So, let them branch out. I want to see more... non-Pokemon stuff from Game Freak.
It was Bulldozer, wasn't it?
But the funny thing is, there are bonus levels which are Pokemon-themed.
And
I think they're awesome, because you get the Pokemon music and, like, Pikachu hot balloons in the background, stuff like that. Hot air balloons. Kind of funny.
I've always been under the impression that the Pokemon company was able to do whatever the hell they wanted. So I always assumed it wasn't Nintendo, it's just them. Like, they already just turned out Pokemon Black and White 2, and they're working on XY. So, I mean, it's anybody's, you know, I think their policy is, I think if it takes up less than 15% of your time, you can work on it on the side, and that's what Hollow Knight is. And
Nintendo has something to do with getting because Pokemon's a big moneymaker for them. I'm sure Nintendo has to be, like, pushing them, be like, hey, when's that next Pokemon coming? How's that coming along? Just like how They're like trying to get Smash Bros. Out of Sakurai like every single generation.
Yeah, but that's different. I mean, Sakurai is free to do whatever he wants in between that. And it's the same thing with Pokemon Company.
Well, the thing is, though, is because Game Freak are doing Pokemon so often, because it's almost one a year.
Yeah, and they have two teams, as far as I know. So, I mean, again,
it's the second team to make, like...
The remake.
yeah, the remake, so...
Or the third version. So, yeah, I mean, Pokemon... Like I said, I'm not saying that they are absolved of this. I'm just saying it doesn't seem like it's Nintendo holding a gun to their head, make more Pokemon game. It just seems like Pokemon is always, it's kind of a Call of Duty for them. It's always kind of there. But yeah, it's interesting. And like Daniel, like Martin says, it does pay homage to their main franchise. So yeah, I've heard people compare it to Bit Trip and say that Bit Trip is a better rhythm game.
Well, the side-scrolling levels, I can see, or you can maybe compare it to Bit Trip Runner, but Bit Trip Runner in that regard is probably better, but I think the game tries to do something different. And like I said, there are also a lot of boss levels, and those are more like Space Channel 5, and I enjoy that a lot.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Well, as for me, I finished Ego City Undercover. I don't know if I'm going to do a formal review on it, but playing the game really kind of opened my eyes as to what I expect in the game now. And, like, Ego City has a lot of technical issues. I've mentioned this on the show. It takes about 2-3 minutes to start up from the initial start to when you actually get to play the game, which I think is insane for any game. The camera's not that great. And I mentioned the combat's extremely basic, and it doesn't evolve over the course of the game, which I think is highly disappointing, because they introduce a lot of elements that I think would have been great in combat. Like, you get a laser gun, you get a paint gun, you can shoot a chicken, don't ask, you have a pickaxe, you have a shovel, you have a jack, you have all these things. And I'm like, you know, this would have been awesome to kind of work it into the combat in some meaningful manner. And none of it ever happens. Your combat is basically a block, a throw, and another throw. Like a grab. And that's basically it. And like, you press it, and it's pretty much just phase out of canned animation. And I'm like, you could have done something here to make it stand out instead of this kind of, you know, like, the game is also wise enough not to put you in and out of fights throughout it. It took me about 20 hours, and I would say less than an hour of it was spent in combat. So it knows that it's not a strong suit, but
it really... Yeah, I finished that game as well. Yeah, I kind of got burnt out by the end of it. I was like, I don't really want to play this game anymore, but it has some excellent humor. The humor is not for everybody, but I really like the dumb humor. And got repetitive. But I don't know. I would say that there, less than an hour of combat probably, but the combats were pretty frequent, especially in the second half of it. You have like 6 or 7 guys come at you. But as you said, yeah, it's just like one button to get them in handcuffs. But
here's the thing, and this is the thing that kind of drove me to the game, and this is probably the thing that's going to keep me going back, even though I've beat it, is that this game has that sense of what's going to happen next that really drives me in a great game. It's like, because it kind of, it's kind of the same thing I've said with Saints Row the Third, and why I prefer it over GTA 4, is that Saints Row the Third takes the sandbox game and says, you know what the hell, we'll just kind of throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. So you're not doing the same thing from mission to mission. Everything that you do is something different, something grand, something bizarre, something strange. Like, it ends, like, the last maybe 3 or 4 hours is just, like, movie parody after movie parody after movie parody, done in such a meaningful manner that it really resonated with me, and I just wanted to see what they would do next to top it. And that was what kept me pushing, is because this game had that sense of humor, this sense of charm, this sense of itself, that it's like, you know what, we're not going to be, you know, it's not going to be a protect this mission, it's not going to be a sniper mission, it's not going to be a chase this guy mission. Even though those do happen, it's like, okay, you know what, you're going to break into basically Brofell's base. You're going to fight a giant you're going to ride a giant T-Rex around town while scaring the citizens and all this other stuff. And it's this sense of insanity, this stuff, this randomness that really makes this game stand out. Like, it has that open world stuff where you go and you find random nonsense, but the stuff you find is like, you found a bouncy castle, you find a, what, yeah, what do you call that thing? Not a Ferris wheel. What's the things that in amusement parks that just kind of shoot straight up? No, the ones that shoot straight up and just fall right back down.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know what they're called, though.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a proper term, but they have, you know, you find that. You find a bunch of jump ramps. You find basketball nets. You find skee ball. You find slides. You find a bunch of Nintendo cameos. You have Cheep Cheeps, and you have Magic Stars. You have a bombs. You can find a Mario costume. You can find Star Fox and Coin Blocks and all this other stuff. And it's just this sense of, like, they just like, you know what, we have this idea. Let's find a way to put it into the game and see if it works. And some of it works, some of it doesn't. But the idea that, you know what, they just kind of, like, made this world, they created it, and they said, just throw everything in there. And some of it will, you know, some of it will, the fans will stick with, some of it the fans will kind of pass over. But everything's in there, and it's so great. I mean, I think one of the most recent things you open up is you have a pig cannon where you can fire pigs back to a farm. Like, I don't know how it aims perfectly that the pigs always end in the farm, but it's one of those things that's just a really neat little ha-ha moment. And you do
there's a farm where there was a good spot in it. Yeah, there's a lot to that world, actually. You get a helicopter, too, at nearing the end, and yeah, and you can explore, like, everywhere there. That world is pretty detailed. It's pretty amazing.
And I mentioned this with, I think I mentioned this with my first impressions, and again, kind of going back to Saints Row and GTA 5, 4, is that I like the fact that this isn't a real city. It's not an actual city. One of the things I didn't like with GTA 4 was, like, it was New York City. I know New York City. I live in New York City. So it's like, oh, I know that street. Oh, I've been on that train. There's Times Square. And it's like, it's nothing new because it's just kind of neat to see where it is in the game world. Where this is like, oh, there's a farm right next to a major city. I don't know how that makes any sense, but, oh, here's a helicopter. Here's a UFO. Like, okay, I'm going with this because you never really kind of know what the city has to offer you. And the game does a pretty good job of sending you throughout the city as the game progresses on various missions. So even 20 hours in, I was seeing parts of towns I've never been in. And
it's like Mario's world where it's like, oh, the desert's right beside the ice place. It's like, what?
But, you know, how they do in the Mushroom Kingdom.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where it was just so, you know, it was just so nice because as you progress throughout the game and you open up more costumes and more abilities, more of the worlds open up to you. So even places that you've been to, you know, a dozen times become something different when you have the ability to, you know, use a jackhammer to, you know, dig out some ground or to use your chicken to fly across the chicken thing's so weird. I'm sure it's a homage to Zelda, but it's still so random. So yeah, Echo City Undercover, it's one of those games that I can't recommend if you don't have the system. But if you do have the system, it's a really charming game to pick up. It won't be the world's greatest open world game, but it's something very different and fun and enjoyable.
Yeah, definitely. If you have a Wii U, play Lego City Undercover because there's not many Wii U games, so you might as well.
Yeah. Speaking of Wii U games, or not Wii U games, Rayman Legends Challenge app came out this week. And this is Ubisoft's, I guess, soft apology to Wii U owners for the end of Rayman Legends into the summer. And basically, this is, I will just say this up front, I think this is how more games should do demos going forward, because it gives you a chunk of the game, but it does it in such a meaningful manner that replaying the demo actually has some merit on its own. Because it's basically an arcade mode. You get there's a weekly challenge and there's daily challenges, and each one you have various tasks. You know, like today's challenge is just trying to go as far as you can while you control the guy who touches the screen while the character navigates the world. So you just have to make sure you get all the obstacles out of his way. It's simple enough, and still, you know, until stuff starts rushing it up and there's like 100 things going on screen and stuff like that, and you're trying to take out the enemies while you're on this platform and there's a lot of screen coming towards you and all this other stuff. And what really kind of, you know, helps this, you know, on its own, it's probably, is that, it, you know, it has a leaderboard, it has a way to compare with your friends, you can challenge your friends who haven't played, you can see how you do against the rest of the world. They even have an active ghost, so it shows you people who are closest to you in the world, so while you're playing, you'll see like these ghosts, and like, okay, you know, this is how they do that. I can kind of shave off time here and there, and that's, you know, that's kind of helpful. And again, it gives you a reason to kind of go back to Rayman every day instead of just saying, oh, this is a fun demo, I'll get the game in August. It's like, oh, what's the new daily challenge? What's the new weekly challenge? What's the, you know, how are my friends doing? Can I top this person's score? And On top of that, I don't know, I assume they do this with the weekly challenge as well. With the daily challenge, I think it's the top 100 people get put into a certain bracket and they get an award. So every day you have to be within that top 100. So there's a reason to kind of keep on going back and improving your score to make sure that you stay within that 100 person bracket. You also get, I think it's platinum, gold, silver, and bronze based on your score, your time, and stuff like that. Right now there seems to be three types of challenges. There's the time attack where you just try to get through a stage as fast as possible. There is a score attack where you try to get the highest, you try to get a certain score in as quick as time as possible. And then there is what I was doing today, which is just a distance run where you just try to see how far you can go without dying or taking damage. It's enjoyable. I mean, it came out Thursday. I've played it every day since then just to kind of, you know, see what the daily challenges are and see if I can at least top some of my friends, because some people have insane amount of skill in that game, and I don't really know what they're doing to get that time. But if you have a Wii U and apparently you aren't doing anything with it, it's another fun little thing from the eShop. Just to wrap it up, because I finally got time to actually use my system this week, and we'll talk about it more as we go into the news. I also spotted New Super Mario Bros. U. And it's New Super Mario Bros. Again. Which isn't a complaint. It's not a complaint at all. Aside from the DS one, I actually have the franchise and stuff like that. It's, you know, great fun. The squirrel suit took some getting used to because I'm used to constant find things in Mario. This is more of a guide. I have the baby Yoshis, and I love what they do with the music, and I know that's not something everybody says, but I love how, you know, it's something they've done since Mario World, but I think it's more pronounced here, where they add little, like, tropical drums to the background whenever you have a Yoshi or you're riding Yoshi.
The baby Yoshis are a tease, I find, because I keep wanting to feed them stuff like Super Mario World and have them turn
grow
into actual Yoshi. Yeah, and then have them have, like, unique abilities. But
well, I mean, they do have unique abilities, but
yeah.
I get you. When I saw them, I'm like, oh, they're bringing that, because this seems like Super Mario World. It has, you know, they bring back Monty Mo, they bring back, you know, like the cape was a glider, not a fly, and that's kind of what the squirrel suit is and stuff like that. They bring back Boom Boom, they bring back the, when you defeat a castle, an airship, Mario beats it up like he did in Super Mario World. It has to connect, like, a lot of it is Super Mario World, but its own unique spin. I've always been a fan of the dance that the enemies do in these games. And, you know, they have enemies, of course, the Koopas and Goombas stop and dance. The new egg squirrel enemies, they do a roll and stuff like that. And there's little mushroom head guys just kind of smile at the camera. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I've always liked that little touch in the franchise of just seeing them dance and stuff like that. And seeing that they've added new ones and new enemies. It's an enjoyable thing.
Yeah, it's a great game, and those touches are wonderful. One thing, it's probably the closest to, like, a Super Mario World replication, but there's one thing that the new Super Mario Bros. Franchise can't really copy from Super Mario World, and that's how I find Super Mario World, how it displays its secrets, like how you get into secret levels and explore all the secret stuff, has never been replicated in the same sort of spirit that it was in Super Mario World.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems to me that the secrets in all the other 2D games that have came after it have been pretty straightforward, kind of just like flat and plain in comparison to Super Mario World. But
That reminds me of something else, and it was something I noted. And this happened with Super Mario 3D Land and New Super Mario Bros. U. And it's something that Nintendo should probably carry over to their other games. I understand not every game is as easy. But, like, with the squirrel suit and with the raccoon suit, in Super Mario 3D Land, you learn that the squirrel suit, like, if you don't know, if you learn that the squirrel suit can do the glide and stuff like that and the tailspin, because enemies do it in the background when you first get it, and you can see them do it. New Super Mario Bros. U does the same thing with the squirrel suit. The first time you see an enemy with it, they stick to a wall. So if you didn't know you can stick to a wall, you see an enemy do it. And that's basically the tutorial on that suit. There's no, like, okay, here's what the suit can do. It's like, oh, an enemy can do that. So I guess Mario can do that as well. And you find a wall nearby, he sticks to it, and you find you can stick to it and then bounce off. That's it. And I wish they would take that, you know, show, not tell mentality with some of their tutorials.
Well, that's the thing that I wish every video game would do. I mean, I understand that there's some things that you have to tell the player and you can't show them. But nowadays it's been like, oh,
if you don't know how to play a first-person shooter, this is how you do it. And by the way, I'm going to explain every menial thing in the game mechanics that we could show you, but we're not going to because we're lazy.
I agree in certain contexts, and then I also disagree in some games. Like, for example, Metal Gear Rising and Resident Evil 6 had, because games have gotten a lot complex now with all the buttons, and then like the sensitivity of pushing the button does different things, and then this button plus this button. And there's a lot of core mechanics in RE6 and Metal Gear Rising that they did not explain to you that you couldn't really figure out yourself.
I get that. But it's like nowadays, most of the time, it's just, oh, we're just going to tell you in the tutorial. We're not going to bother leaving it up to yourself to learn this crap.
Well, no, I mean, I get what Phil's saying, and I do agree with that. I also think that there is a way to kind of do it where it's not, like what happens with a lot of games is that it's literally a tutorial. Like, okay, we're going to show you how to do this stuff, so here's how you do it. Like, I think Vanquish was a game of recent date where it's literally a tutorial. You're in a room, and they're telling you how to do everything. Where like, I think there is a way to kind of do it and integrate it into the game.
Definitely. I know there has to be middle ground there between, you know, like one of the very pushy, straightforward, first-person shooters and like a Resident Evil 6.
I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but Skyward Sword, for example, it's an extended tutorial for sure, but it builds everything into the story. Like, you're kind of progressing a story as you're learning the tutorial, and it's designed not like, oh, okay, here's what, you know, he gets his tunic, he gets his sword, this is how you use a sword. It's kind of like, this is, they set it up as an academy, and there's a reason why he's doing this stuff as a character.
Zelda's always been good at that, because it gives you an item in a dungeon, and then says, oh, now you get used to the item, and then by the time you get to the boss, oh, now you should be an expert with this item. Use it to beat the boss.
Yeah.
I like the Devil May Cry, the new one, the reboot, philosophy of just, like, constantly introducing things. So, like, you're never using the same items throughout the entire game. Like, even towards the end of the game, you're getting something new to use.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there are ways to do it. I just thought, you know, I noticed that because I saw them. I know the abilities because I kind of follow these games as they come out. But I saw them, like, you know, this is one of those things where it's a nice, clever way to inform the gamer without stopping the game and telling them. It's like, oh, this enemy can do it, so can I. Or at least that should be the notion that if the enemy has a similar ability to you, you should be able to mimic it in some fashion. That's not always the case in games, as we've seen. There's enemies who can do insane stuff that the gamer can never touch. And it would also be nice for RPGs, because I think RPGs take forever to get going. I think that's all I've been saying. I mean, the other stuff we'll kind of touch in on news, which we can start now. And I guess we might as well start off with Nintendo, since we ended with Nintendo. And I honestly don't know where to start with Nintendo. It's been a hell of a week for them. I guess you can start off with the fact that their president is now the president of Nintendo of America. So Satoru Iwata has promoted himself to Nintendo of America's CEO, in addition to being the CEO and president of Nintendo in general.
That's a good move for them, global unification, to have direct communication between Japan and the America branches. I think that's a good move.
See,
I'm not too sure though, because Iwata might be spreading himself a little too thin, because Nintendo has problems in Japan, but they've got even more problems than they do in Japan with in the Americas. So I don't know. I mean, Reggie seems like he's pretty capable. I just don't understand why.
Yeah, I agree. I would rather them have an American lead the American branch, but still be in direct communication with the Japanese branch.
Well, you have to assume that they have that communication there anyway, because you can't run a company without it. I'm just curious that Iwata take the position up himself instead of promoting somebody.
I feel like I assume it's a short-term deal. I don't think it's going to be something where you see Iwata as president of Nintendo of America 5 years down the line. But I do think, and I mean, we don't know how the infrastructure of Nintendo works exactly, but I do feel like there probably was a roadblock where like, Nintendo of America would get somewhere in negotiations, and then they'd have to speak to Japan. Japan would have to think on it. And so, you know, like, it's one of those things where it's not instantaneous where somebody just gets a decision. It's like you have to speak to all these people above you. Because it seems like there's a Nintendo of Japan, not Nintendo of Japan, Nintendo of America, Nintendo of Europe, Nintendo of Australia, but all decisions seem to run to Nintendo of Japan anyhow. So it seems like it's one of those things where he's probably just taking over the day-to-day stuff so that maybe he'll spend more time here, and I hope that what comes out of this is he spends more time talking to third parties and, you know, companies to actually kind of – because the Wii U has been feeding support very rapidly this year, and I'm assuming that he probably wants to speak to them and see if he can kind of – and, you know, as you said, it would probably be better to have somebody who has an American sensibility, but, you know, if he's the guy in – position to make the final decision, it's probably easier than having to go through Nintendo of America, who has to go through Nintendo of Japan, who has to go back to Nintendo of America to get your decision.
I guess it makes sense while the Wii U is currently on life support.
Yeah.
They just need to put out Nintendo games. Like, third party is not going to save them.
But this is the problem. This is the problem, though. This is a problem that Nintendo needs to fix. Just put more Nintendo games out. There's only so many games that Nintendo can make.
Well, I mean, I think we'll get
But they to, have well, so many branches, like second-party companies around them. They can make IPs, but
well,
they choose not to.
That's the thing. It's like, and this is another thing, and maybe we'll see something come out of it, is they have a lot of second parties and first, but they're mostly Japanese-centric. I mean, the only Western third-party, second-party they first or second-party they have is really retro. Like, they have NST to a degree, but they kind of work on Virtual Console, and I think the Mario and Donkey Kong series. But other than that, it's one company. Like, they need to, like, at some point, either during the Wii stage or during the transition, they should have started at least a studio in Europe and another studio in America. They kind of have
Don't
to...
Don't forget the games. Canadian company that made Luigi's Mansion 2.
Yeah, I was about to say, they have next level games, but that's a third-party company that they continue to license out.
Do they actually make stuff for other consoles currently?
They made Captain America in between Punch-Out and Luigi's Mansion for the 360 and PS3. So, you know, they're not Nintendo-dependent. And I realize that part of it is because Nintendo has been burnt in the past by people like Rare and Factor 5 and Silicon Knights and stuff like that. But
they weren't burnt by Rare. Didn't they give Rare Xbox?
I think they sold them, but I think part of it was that Rare was looking for more creative freedom. Which can go either way. I mean, we've seen Rare with creative
That's
freedom.
That's quite ironic, isn't it? You want creative freedom, so you get bought by Microsoft.
It happens often. We saw the same thing with the people who have from Retro, who formed that studio, who ended up working on the Metal Gear Solid HD collection, and now they're doing the Batman Arkham Origins.
Well, they're doing what you need to do to... I mean, they're a free company. Sometimes you take up ports in order to just get, increase your bank balance. And I understand that, but getting bought by probably one of the most creatively bankrupt publishers in the fucking industry because they just wanted to turn out Avatars and another Perfect Dark game.
I assume that's not what they wanted, but that's what they got. Because Rare, like I said, given Rare creative freedom can go either way. We've seen Rare can go bad on their own. I think, given the free reign, Donkey Kong 64 is kind of a chore because of the collectathon and it's Rare's grand design. Grabbed by Googies wasn't that great, and that was Rare given free reign. Even Perfect Dark Zero, I would say, wasn't that great, and that was, again, Rare being given free reign.
Nothing Rare did was great after they left Nintendo, except maybe Viva Pinata.
I had Cameo, but...
Did they do Nuts and Bolts Rare? Was it
they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
I like Nuts and Bolts. It was all right. Okay.
Okay, you see, this is what you're saying is all right. This is a company at the end of the 90s would have probably considered one of the best companies in the world. And I was, it's all right. I mean, it's not terrible.
I had fun with it. I had fun with Nuts and Bolts. Okay, well, it's better than all right, in my opinion. It wasn't, like, amazing as there is.
But it wasn't a Banjo-Kazooie game.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah, they I think they've had a ton of opportunities. I'm not saying, they've shared their stance on why they don't buy third party developers, and I kind of understand. You don't want to, just because you buy a name, and again, going back to Rare, doesn't mean you get the talent, because people can leave the company. But, you know, like people they've worked with, like Eurocom, I think they could have purchased because Eurocom worked with the Wii a lot. They did Dead Space Extraction. They did GoldenEye Wii.
Saved Eurocom from Activision.
Which is what I meant. It's like, you know, like this company's going out of business. Go in, kind of pick them up, dust them off, and kind of get them to work on, because they do games you don't do. They do shooters. And, I've always been of two minds. I don't want a Nintendo shooter, but at the same time, that's where the market is. They need that type of game that says, okay, this isn't just a Nintendo system. We can do other things. And they tried that out of the game.
They could do another Metroid Prime-esque
thing. Well, they could do another... See, I wouldn't do a Metroid game because I think... Again,
oh, no, I was saying that they could just do what Retro did with Metroid Prime and just do it to something else.
Well, I think the idea with Corruption was that they were going to spin that off because they introduced all of those other bounty hunters. Because I think there's a certain stigma that comes with a Nintendo title, no matter what it is, Zelda, Mario, Pokemon, is that it's a Nintendo title. So people have... But do a new IP or a spinoff or something that isn't as well known. And I think they do have potential there.
That's a good point. I don't know why public or developers haven't made more Metroidvania style first person shooters.
Instead of
yeah, I know. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, with the oversaturation of like military shooters, you would think that somebody would have been like, "Hey, let's make another Metroidvania style shooter or first person shooter."
But it has several things. Like I said, it's not easy to make. I mean, Metroid Prime. I mean, sure. Retro made it seem easy, but you don't see many Metroidvania games in general. Doing it in first person is even tougher, especially when the core focus of that franchise wasn't combat until Corruption. But the core, it was exploration. Combat was secondary because it was pretty simple. You locked onto your target. It wasn't hard to hit them. The other thing is, while Metroid Prime's a great game, it didn't sell that great. I mean, 2 million copies compared to 20 million for Call of Duty. I mean, that's a huge gap. Are you going to chase the 20 million or the 2 million people?
Yeah, but you also don't have to spend as much as Call of Duty does on marketing and shit like that.
Well, I mean, we've seen that everybody doesn't necessarily make the
right... Just because there's one first person... I mean, this is what I've been thinking of, like. Just because there's one first person shooter that gets 20 million sales... It doesn't mean that you have to chase that shooter's audience, though, does it?
Because there's plenty
of people out there that don't want a Call of Duty.
Yeah, see, that's in actuality, you should, if something gets 20 million, that's the thing you should kind of avoid, because that means there's already a market for that.
Well, there's a reason why Borderlands 2 sold a lot of copies.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, and I think this goes for any business. It's, you know, like, if you ever see, like, a movie, like, a certain movie year where there's a bunch of movies that all look the same, like, you know, that year where everybody had, like, Finding Nemo came out, I think, the same year as Shark Tale, and it's like, this just seems like a ripoff. And it's not necessarily a ripoff, things just kind of align that way, but it's like, oh, I've seen Finding Nemo, I really don't want to see another fish movie. And it's kind of the same thing, like, oh, I have Call of Duty, I have Battlefield, I have Halo, do I really need a fifth first-person shooter? And that's kind of where we are, where everybody's like, we want to be that fourth player. But it's like, yeah, but you already have, I mean, what, Call of Duty does 20 million, Halo does 10 million, Battlefield does 10 million. That's 40 million people playing first-person shooters. Where are you going to fit into that market?
Where Borderlands 2 does. Which sold about 6, didn't it?
Yeah, and that's a different type of game, and that's why it works. But everybody, anyhow, what else? Nintendo... I don't really understand the finances. They made a profit, but they didn't make money? Or they made money to make a
they
profit?
It was a case of they didn't make as much money as they projected to.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. But I thought they had an operating loss, but they had an overall net income or something stupid like that. But anyway,
if they had an operating loss, that means overall they lost money, but they may have made more money than they did before.
Okay, so yeah, they had a net profit of $70 million, which was especially keen because I think the day or two days before that came out that they might have lost like $125 million. So, you know, it was kind of interesting to see how people... I love narratives in video games because it went from, oh, Nintendo's struggling to, oh, they didn't make as much as we expected, but the day before you were saying they weren't going to make any. But either way, it's not a... it's not a healthy ecosystem for them. The Wii U isn't selling. They don't have another game coming out as far as Nintendo publishes until June. And even
that's Game
& Wario. And
that game is not going to move units.
No, it's not going to move units. And I don't think Pikmin 3 is either.
That's true.
Pikmin 3 might help, but yeah, it's not going to.
Pikmin 3 is going to help in the same way that it's going to appease the people who already own the system. It's like, oh, okay, here's a.
I think it'll sell some systems, but yeah.
Every game sells a system. Like, there are people who buy a system for a game, obviously, but in any meaningful manner, I don't know if it's going to.
It's not going to be a case of, I can't fucking wait for Pikmin 3. Oh my god, it's coming out now. I'm going to buy a Wii U.
The only thing that I would...
Why are they so bad at planning? Like, oh my god, I feel so bad for Nintendo.
I don't necessarily think it's them being bad at planning. I think it's them not realizing that... We kind of saw this at the start of this generation as well. Not everybody was prepared for the jump to HD. And while Nintendo had more time, I guess they didn't realize how much of an endeavor it would have been to get HD games up and running. And I think Iwata also said part of it was because... The system kind of came out bunged, so a lot of their staff had to also alternate to get the OS and the patch that came out this week up and running and stuff like that. So they've had to reallocate resources for this. And again, a lot of it is planning. Like, you can't plan for mistakes, but a lot of this is stuff that we've seen before with Nintendo, where they've I don't know the last time Nintendo hasn't had a system that's launched without a launch drought. The Wii, the Wii, the GameCube, the DS, the N64, all kind of had these huge droughts after launch. And
you would think that they would get better at saying, hey, these games, when they promise, hey, look, listen, these games are going to come out in the launch window, and then that doesn't happen. Like, what is going on in their infrastructure where they...
Didn't we already establish in the pre-show that Nintendo doesn't know? Doesn't learn anything from anybody else, let alone themselves.
Yeah.
I think part of it, and this is, this is hubris or whatever, I think part of it is just them thinking that there would be third parties there to fill the void, because if you think about it, we had a pretty packed Q1 this year, and if Nintendo had gotten any of those games, really, it would have helped their lineup, but they didn't get a single one. Not Bioshock, not Tomb Raider, not Metal Gear, not DMC... So it was like a really barren first couple months, and then when they did get games, Lego City, Monster Hunter,
and they're not getting any, and they're not getting much future titles either.
Well, I mean, it's half, and it's really hard to say. Like, there are, clearly there's some dangerous signs. Like, EA's not supporting them with FIFA and Madden, and actually anything really is a huge, huge problem. But as far as, like, major support, they're getting almost everything this year except for GTA and Saints Row, I think. Am I missing anything?
What major thing are they getting? I only know of Ubisoft titles.
Yeah, are they getting Remember Me?
They're not getting Remember Me, but that's not major, let's be honest. I'm just thinking of, like, the summer's barren in general. I'm just thinking they're getting Resident Evil. They're getting Disney Infinity. They're getting, Call of Duty hasn't been announced yet, but I think, that's popped up with the rumors as well that they're getting that.
The last one was on there, so the next one.
But because the Wii had every other year, they would do Black Ops and World at War, but they wouldn't do the Modern Warfare series. But that was when the two guys were there whose name escapes me. Westerns, whatever. We don't have many titles announced for this year yet. I'm assuming a lot of this will come when Microsoft announces their system in the course of E3, but they're getting, they're getting Resident Evil Revelations, which isn't a major title. They're getting Deus Ex, which is a port of a 2-year-old game. I have no idea why that's a thing. They're getting...
I heard why that's a thing.
Why? Or can you not say?
I can say that that's... I don't know if it's true, but apparently the company that is doing the port also made the Mass Effect 3 port, and apparently they went out to different publishers and said, hey, we can do these ports for pretty cheap and pretty quickly, give us whatever we want, and we will do it for not a lot of money, and maybe you can make some on the Wii U.
Yeah. I mean, honestly speaking, that sounds negative, but that's honestly what Nintendo needs, is a company that's out there. I think Nintendo should set up a company that does that at this point, because if third parties aren't willing to do it, you need those games. Like, it's not going to sell systems, but it's going to help fight this negative image that you don't have any games, which is a lot worse. So yeah. So, and he also came out that they're getting out of, you know, like he said that they're getting out of indie developers looking to become Wii U eShop developers and stuff like that. And that's a novel thing, but I think we've had this discussion before. Arcade games, PSN titles,
they're not system sellers.
They're not system sellers. I mean, you have to have the system.
Otherwise, the Vita would be outselling the 3DS right now.
Yeah, you need to have the system to know they exist. Until somebody decides that they're going to take the ball and run with it, and they start advertising these things heavily, it's going to be one of those things like, oh, this is cool. Like, oh, there's nothing coming out there over to someone. And just get these Xbox Live titles or eShop titles. They're not going to be system sellers.
And still, like, stuff like Splinter Cell and stuff will not move units either. Assassin's Creed.
No, like we had this discussion pre-on Troy asked E3, where I don't think these.
Where I said they're not going to move any units. And
I agree with that. What I said is that these aren't the type of games that move units. These are the type of games that you can say. It's kind of to create the illusion of parity, because you don't want to say, okay, I'm not getting a Wii U because it doesn't have this, this, and that. Instead, you can say, okay, I'll get a Wii U. Oh, and I can get Splinter Cell, I can get Injustice or whatever on it because it's also on the system. Where I think it's a lot easier to say, okay, I'm not going to get a Wii U because it doesn't have the next Thief. It doesn't have...
Because it has no games. You could be completely reductionist.
Yeah. Which is always a terrible argument. I saw somebody, you know, like somebody mentioning the Vita on Twitter. Like, oh, people always say the Vita has no games. It's always getting... the argument, it shouldn't be that it has no games. Literally, every system has video games. The idea is it has no video games that has any meaningful mainstream appeal to people. And
the question is if Nintendo can generate those must-have titles themselves.
Well, Nintendo can generate those must-have
titles. Maybe.
I mean,
we don't know. It also depends kind of on what image the console will have in the future. Stuff like that. It's not just pushing out titles.
I mean,
look at the GameCube.
The GameCube, I think, and the GameCube is a failure. I think anybody would say that. But I think if it was not for Nintendo, that would have been a system that killed any other company. Because it really had no momentum, but Nintendo had the, you know, like, it had Smash Brothers, that would sell some units, it had Sunshine, that would sell some units, it had Wii, that would sell some units. And they kind of had that momentum until they could jump along until the Wii.
And the thing is the GameCube has a much better image now than it ever did, because of nostalgia.
I hate that so much.
Which is really bad. You don't want the Wii U to be like that. You want it to have a good image now, not in 10 years when you're not producing any more games for it.
That happens every, like, history keeps repeating itself. Like, things that people hated before, like, 10 years later, oh, this is awesome. Like, seeing...
I never bought a GameCube first time, but I have a GameCube right now.
Seeing it with Final Fantasy X right now, with the HD stuff, and everybody's like, oh my god, Final Fantasy X is the best Final Fantasy. I dropped off the series after that. I'm like, I was there when this came out. Everybody hated it. Because it was such a departure, but now everybody loves it. So yeah, weird.
Yeah, and it's always going to be that way. People have this fondness for some, and I, you know, I said this about any video game. You don't remember the bad games; you really remember the good stuff that stuck out to you. And that's what's going to happen with this. I think the other major issue, and this is something that Nintendo can't control, it's something that Microsoft and Sony can't control. It's just a lot of these publishers have fallen off to the wayside in this past generation. People like THQ, Arkane, Midway, we're just using a lot of publishers. There aren't as many as there used to be, so that just means that there's going to be less resources in its games.
If someone like EA says, we are not going to make any games for you, that's a major hit.
We're in a weird time right now where, like, I have half of a feeling that I don't think the PS4 or the next Xbox will sell nearly as much as what happened in generation.
There are a lot of people out there, including me, that think that this generation, being PS4, next Xbox, Wii U, is going to be the last console generation.
Well, they asked proper console generation.
The last proper one.
I think that's a, I think that's a discussion we should hold off until E3. I really, really just want to wait until we have all the details, because this week has been hectic. We're not going to talk about the rumors around the next Xbox, but I swear, if I see any more overreaction to any of the news that comes out about that system before it's officially announced, I'm going to snap.
But it continues to sound bad, so whatever.
It does continue to sound bad, but at this point, I'm just like, I'm willing to wait until Microsoft officially announces it, because I want I want finalized details. I want information. I don't want, you know, these rumors. Like, everything's pointing in one direction. Yes, we know that. But maybe it's misinterpreted 15 times. Who knows? I want to give them the benefit of the doubt.
I'm excited. Like, the future of video games is so uncertain that it is very fascinating to be here right now following what is going to happen.
The funny thing is complete opposite from this from my end, because I play games on PC, and PC gaming is never going to change, ever. And that's why I like it, because I don't have to worry about, oh, there's no backwards compatibility, because I'll always have it, and I have always had it, you know. And I don't have to worry about any new always-on DRM schemes, because I've got to deal with them already, you know.
But that doesn't make it good. Like, I'm
no, that's not a good thing, but I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to worry about will this happen, will it not, because I already know what's happening, because what's happening to me is going to happen to you.
Yeah, well, like, we're not going to see another crash. Like, it's not going to be that extreme. Consoles aren't going to die out, but something dramatically different is probably going to happen.
I can see that happening. I don't necessarily see consoles dying out, but I could see a lot of publishers dying in a rapid pace, especially if the transition to next gen is more expensive than they're hoping, and we don't have, like, what my fear is, and again, we'll kind of have this, we'll hold this until E3, is that there won't be enough forward momentum in the first year on these systems, and a lot of people just won't be able to keep up. But again, we'll see when everybody kind of shows their cards at E3. And speaking of E3, this is the other thing that came out about Nintendo, is Nintendo is foregoing a traditional E3 press conference this year. But we don't have exact details, which is another overreaction I hate. They haven't, yes, part of it is on Nintendo, but they haven't specifically come out and said what they're doing instead. They have.
They said there was going to be a retail and publisher meeting in the theater that we're going to use for the tour, and there's going to be games on the floor that the press can access to can play before E3, and that's how it's going to work. And I personally think that whoever made this decision at Nintendo is a very, very smart person. They know.
Yeah, I agree, and it's been insane to see, like, the reaction of being like, what, Nintendo is not going to have a press conference? What are they doing?
The worst thing
is
people like, how are they going to be covered? Well, there's going to
be press exactly, like, they're still doing announcements, new games are still going to come out, like, nothing's changing. It's ridiculous.
I think that somebody at Nintendo sat there and went, well, the Sony have got the PS4, and Microsoft have got the next Xbox, so they're going to have a lot more to talk about than us. So let's not do it, which is the best idea that anybody could have come up with.
Well, I mean, this is what I was talking about as far as full details go, is that they are doing something. They are going to have some type of event. Most likely everybody's kind of pointed towards a Nintendo Direct type event, which would make sense. But we don't know how big, you know, like, is it going to be like a pre-recorded? I assume it's pre-recorded, but, like, you know, a lot of things that come out is like, oh, you know, E3 is this mainstream event. E3 is kind of this event where everybody has their eyes on the gaming industry and how to, you know, mainstream press is going to cover it and stuff like that. And my notion is, we don't know, like, there's nothing stopping Spike TV from airing a Nintendo Direct in lieu of a Nintendo press conference. There's nothing stopping the press from watching these conferences and giving their reactions to it. I think there is a certain element loss when you have a pre-recorded show, because, you know, with a live event, there is that element of anything can happen. You know, we've seen a lot of E3s where demos have screwed up and timing has been off. And, you know, this is kind of what the internet is afraid of, is that we're going to miss out on all that nonsense that we mock and make fun of after the shows are done, because it's pre-recorded and it's safe and everything. So until we know the exact details, until we know like, if they're doing a Nintendo Direct that's all going to be streamed on their YouTube channel or something like that, or if they're going to do an hour-long presentation that's on Spike TV, I don't think it's really fair to say one way or another if this is a good or bad decision for them.
Well, I think it's just a simple case of Nintendo knows that they're not going to be able to compete at E3, so they're not competing at all for the most part. Well, when it comes to the press conferences alone.
And that doesn't sound smart to me at all.
See, that's the other thing that came out this week that I don't like. And I know it is, but it really just makes E3 sound like a big dick-waving contest. It's like they can't compete, so they're not going to show up. To me, it's not necessary that they don't want to compete. It's that we always complain that E3 is kind of filled with these boring sales talk. So they're separating that out into a separate conference.
Does it? Well, the last few years, these conferences didn't have much business talk at all.
Yeah, and that's what Nintendo said, is that traditionally that's what we did, and we kind of gone away with it. And I think what happens is, and this kind of goes back to what E3 is that they realize this is their chance to speak to everybody at once, and they can't do that while also promoting, you know, giving gamers the show they want. You know, that big over-the-top, this game, this game, this game, this game, this game. They need to talk business because, like we said, the Wii U isn't doing too hot. And they need to show these people that they have a vision.
And the thing is what people don't understand is this isn't – they never said that this is going to be a permanent thing. As far as we know, this is going to be this year. And that's it.
And like I said, it can throw up in their face. It could, you know, it could be an amazing thing. But we don't know enough to know. Right, and even when they announce it, I don't think we know enough until they go through with it. And I think, you know, failure or success, it's nice that somebody's at least trying something different from the norm with E3, because that seems to be the main notion here. It's like, this is how we're accustomed to E3 being. They're not doing this, so this must mean that they're afraid, that they can't compete, that they're running. And that's not necessarily what's happening. It's one of those things where I think Adam Sessler had assessed or something on it. And I'm just thinking, like, he's talking about how Nintendo's, like, this backwards and sincere company. I'm like, this is kind of forward thinking. If they're trying to get away from this, you know, this is a stage where I broadcast it. We'll kind of do this whole thing where we reach everybody on the internet. They can have it on YouTube. You know, you can watch it at your YouTube. You don't have to be there live. There's a certain element that comes with watching an event live with other people. But it's kind of like, we're going to try to make this a multimedia event. And if they can find a way to work that into their systems, like, we didn't mention this in anything, but the Wii U's Panoramic View came out this week on the eShop, and it's a guided video that you can use your gamepad to examine the world in a 3D space, whatever. But if they kind of use that to do a, you know, it could give people a booth tour of the, you know, the E3 setup and stuff like that. It's the way to bring E3 to gamers that they haven't had before.
That would be cool. I thought the audio Panoramic View was stupid until you mentioned that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, it would be kind of neat to be like, okay, here's our booth, here's, you know, here's, you know, kind of giving people, like, here's how E3 is for those who aren't there. So, you know, if they are able to kind of use the various things, the various tools they have at hand. And yes, I realize they can do this while still having a traditional press conference. But I think this whole, I think it's a novel idea. I want to see what happens with it. I don't want to make a snap judgment about it being awful or great for them until it happens. But it is interesting, and it is something that I look forward to come E3.
I'm not going to say it's a great thing or it's a bad thing. I just think it makes a lot of sense as it stands.
And it also saves money, which they aren't really, you know, swimming in right now, so and I the press confuses me, because I would think it's more enjoyable because they get to spend more time in the show floor ahead of the crowd to actually play video games, which is what we want. Like, we can all see the video, we don't need your impressions of people on stage talking. But I don't know. What were you saying, Martin, before I cut you off?
I don't even remember when you cut me off.
My bad. Happens. Is there anything else Nintendo? Oh, the patch for the Wii U came out this week as well. Anybody download that?
I downloaded it. I don't really know what to say about it. What, like, faster load times?
Yeah, it seems to just be an overall kind of a system maintenance thing. I mean, there's a lot of neat stuff they've added, like the ability, like they've added a lot of stuff that you get with PSN Plus, the ability to download and install games in the background all while your system's in standby mode.
Oh, yeah, and when the system's off, too, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think the ability to, what is it? Oh, now that if you download something from the eShop, and this is always something I've always found weird, it comes with the updates. I always hated the fact that you'd have to update something separately after downloading it. Like, it should be the most recent version if I'm downloading it, but that's kind of
And now
cool.
You can transfer your games and stuff over to another Wii U console?
Can you? I thought it was just between hard drives.
Actually, I'm not sure now. Now I'm second guessing myself.
I don't know. I don't have. You can use the Wii mode and the Wii Pro controller on the dashboard and internet browser, and you can also boot into Wii mode now, which is kind of cool by holding down.
Holding down B or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. It reminds me of the GameCube, which you can hold down A to get into the system menus. So yeah, I mean, a lot of neat stuff. I mean, the biggest part for a lot of people is just that the overall OS is faster, getting in and out of stuff. But they added a lot of neat little stuff as well, especially as far as downloads go and installing stuff, because I think that was the two biggest problems, is like, especially installation, where it would take like 20 minutes, but now you can do it in the background while playing a game or whatever. And they also launched the Miiverse for web browsers and smartphones.
You have to sign up.
Huh? Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
I didn't hear it.
You still need a Wii to sign up.
Oh. Which kind of makes sense, because if you didn't have a Wii to sign up, there's no way to put your account on a Wii U right now, which is another issue altogether.
What's the point? Because if you have a Wii U, why don't you just use the Miiverse on the Wii U?
I was gonna say part of it is that you know, like if you're not by a Wii, you can read and comment and stuff. I think the other thing, and a lot of people were kind of around with this, is that it also allows you to pull your artwork from the Miiverse, so drawings and screenshots and stuff is just much easier to get instead of. Because there was no way to get it off your Wii. I mean, granted, they should have just had an option to send screenshots to your email like they did on the Wii. A lot of the stuff they introduce in systems, they just kind of fall to the wayside with no rhyme or reason. But it's Nintendo. Okay. Is there anything else?
I just wish that you could... Because, like, the whole thing, what's fascinating to me with the Miiverse is you can be like, oh, this is awesome. Let's send a link to this other person. But then if that other person doesn't have a Wii U account, like, you can't even... see it anyway. So.
I thought you could see stuff, but you have to.
You can see there is a very limited demo version of it, but you can't see all of the posts unless you have an account.
Oh, okay.
Like there's a select few posts that you can see if you don't have an account.
Oh, okay.
It might be like the latest. I don't know.
Top 100 or whatever. Okay. Is there anything else Nintendo created that we might have missed this week? It's been a very busy week for them. So moving on, we had... we've kind of hinted at this before. Microsoft announced finally that the next Xbox will be revealed on May 21st.
Yay. So you can see how Microsoft ruins the industry on May 21st.
Don't all be so excited.
It's a bit hyperbolic. I'm not looking forward to it. The news around the new Xbox is not good at all. So I don't think anybody has any reason to be excited about it right now.
I'm curious because, I mean, maybe I've read it wrong, but it sounds like this event is mostly a hardware thing and then the games and stuff comes at E3, or am I...
Apparently someone said that there will be games at the May 21st. But you know what it will be. It will be Halo thing, Gears thing, Forza thing.
Well, I mean, I think Microsoft is working on 4 new IPs as well. Or so that's a rumor. So, again, we'll see come May 21st, just in a month to go.
I'm excited. New hardware.
I'm excited for hardware. Even if the event leaves me kind of meh afterwards.
Thing is, I'm mostly at this point, because we were excited to see if Microsoft really wants to shoot themselves in the foot so badly.
I think I'm preemptively saying that the PS4 wins this one. Just without, just like a guess, not having all the knowledge on PS4, any knowledge on the Xbox. It just seems like the PS4 is a console built by people who know what they're doing and they're passionate about it. And, like, I think that the 360, in terms of what all the consoles this generation promised that it would do, the 360 is the one that was closest to their goal in terms, because the PS3 is a big pile of shit in many ways in terms of like download speeds and internet connection and a lot of that stuff. But I think with the PS4, they might be able to get back to the glory of the PS1, PS2 days. And, now the Xbox is in the position that Sony was when they came out with the PS3, thinking that, you know, they own the industry and they can do whatever they want and just be like, okay, since we own it, we're just gonna, you know, spew a bunch of bullshit, you know, always online, what have you. And now they're gonna get their wake up call like the PS3 did last generation. So
I think, and again, well, I think we could also be in for the other alternative, which isn't so pretty, to have a 3-way tie for losers, is have nobody really come out the kid and do that well. But we shall see.
That's an option too.
That's a scary thought, but we'll save it for E3 and stuff like that. THQ IPs were up for sale this week, and apparently Nordic Games, the biggest publisher in the world, the huge colossus of the gaming industry, bought like everything for like $5.
But these guys, like, Nordic, I didn't expect Nordic Games. I didn't really know of them that much.
I didn't know who they were until this show happened.
Well, I knew kind of who they were. I knew they were the publishers of Painkiller nowadays. But the problem is they're not the kind of people that will produce a Red Faction Guerrilla 2, so the Red Faction IP is going to be completely wasted on them.
Every IP is wasted on them.
Yeah, and they
have a couple of good stuff in there with everything they bought. Basically, all the remaining THQ IPs have been split between 3 publishers, if I'm not mistaken. Most of the stuff, Drawn to Life and something else went to 505 Games. Homeworld Gearbox. We will talk about that later. And all the rest to Nordic Games. So that includes stuff like Red Faction, Darksiders, Full Spectrum Warrior. A lot of good stuff in there that you will probably
never see again. They already said they're not doing another Darksiders game or have no plans to right now.
I thought they said they wanted to see the Darksiders franchise and
Rip Darksiders. No, they said everything but Darksiders.
I guess because the original company that made it is no longer in business. Because they said they want to see if they can work closely with other original developers on getting new installations in these franchises, which means a lot of these franchises will be put to rest.
Homeworld got to Gearbox.
And that's dead. That's dead.
One thing at least sounded good when they announced that, when they talked about, we want to get the old games working and back online so people can easily purchase them. So that's good. Fine. But
don't expect anything good from me anymore, Homeworld games.
Exactly.
Why so good to buy that? I don't know why.
When you think about strategy games, you don't exactly think Gearbox.
Let's put it this way. When you think about good games, you don't necessarily think about Gearbox either.
They're so up and down, it is crazy.
Latest output.
Yeah, I'm sure it will work great as a first-person shooter.
I don't even know how that would work.
Syndicate first-person shooter, that was so good. That's what happens when you turn an RTS into that.
It probably won't work, but they'll try. They'll try.
Why couldn't Sega just buy that IP?
Yeah, Sega's not really in a position to spend money right now. What really was sad about this whole ordeal is like all these IPs went for under $6 million. And I mean THQ in general, like the entire company subdivided went for $40-50 million in general. And that's just, it's really just kind of sad.
Yeah.
So I guess once again we can say rest in peace THQ.
You know what is kind of weird is somebody keeps manning the THQ UK account on Twitter, and it's kind of weird to see it tweet every now and then. Like whenever something like to do with Volition or Relic comes up, they tweet about it, and it's very strange. It's even weirder the fact that the avatar is now a gravestone with a THQ logo on it. I know THQ is like a corporate entity, and it's not like one person, but THQ doesn't exist anymore, and I'm still seeing it in my Twitter feed. Why is this?
It's kind of awesome.
It's like that old
what are
thing
they even saying?
Like, if Relic tweets about like one of their old franchises, or if someone talks about Saints Row 4, they just retweet it and add like a two or three word comment.
You know what would be funny? If it actually was David Terry.
He needs something to do. The other thing, I guess, is that EA, there's no official number has come out. They have lowered it down to hundreds, though, right?
And I heard like, it was 2,000.
No, I've heard that that's been lowered. Because it was like, I think when it came out, it was somewhere between 10% and 2,000 people, which would have been between 1,000 and 2,000 people. But now it's somewhere in the hundreds. Either way, it's also a lot of manpower.
And huge part of that is that they are shutting down the EA Partners program.
Yes, but they're still committed to Fuse and Respawn game.
Committed.
Well, I don't know. Obviously, we don't know anything about Respawn's game, but I can't see Fuse doing too well.
No, I can't either.
Fuse is the future.
When is Fuse again supposed to come out?
Next month? I think it's the end of May, yeah.
Yeah, there's
really?
Almost
there's no marketing.
No marketing for it.
I think they announced their release date this past week or something like that, but I think it's like May 27th or something like that.
This looks exactly like the stuff they did with other partners' titles like Reckoning and the Syndicate game. Basically.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, I think it was 2 weeks ago, what's it called? Just came out and nobody knew that happened. Brothers in Arms? No, not Brothers in Arms. Army of Two.
So you don't even know the title of what it is.
But Army of Two isn't a partners game.
No, I know, but I'm just saying EA seems to not. And Activision's really guilty of this. Like, if it's not one of their major brands, they just kind of throw it out there and hope for the best. Or worse,
I don't know. The only partners title that EA ever promoted was Crysis 2 and probably Crysis 3.
And that's because it had a name attached to it already.
Well, it's still.
Yeah.
They promoted Brutal Legend as well.
Did they?
I think so. I'm pretty sure. they had all that Jack Black stuff.
Well, I think
that
probably helped it with a known Hollywood star in it. Like, again, Crysis 2 and 3 had Crysis, so it was a known quantity of the game. Brutal Legends had Jet Black, which is a, I don't want to say a major star. I don't even remember the last movie he was been in, but it's a movie, and he's a star, so.
There's a sect of people that are very passionate about him, so.
And there are special people in every world. And finally, The Evil Within.
Anyway, the partners.
Oh, I want this game to be so good. And so, oh man, I really want this game to be good. I really do. The Evil Within. I love horror games. I love horror in any medium.
Shinji Mikami.
Yeah, I really want this game to be good. Do not let me down, please. I hope to God. I haven't played a good horror game in so long, so I really need this.
And that's kind of what
he
said.
Have you played Siren Blood Curse? If not, you should.
Have I played what?
Man, that game.
Siren Blood Curse.
That game is creepy as hell.
Oh, no, I haven't. I know what you're talking about, but no, I have not.
Oh my god.
Play it then.
You will like that game. I'm serious. That game is creepy.
Anyway, The Evil Within, yeah, it looks kind of cool. I mean, the screenshot looked pretty good. The live action trailer they did was creepy as hell. Shinji Mikami, I can't remember that I played ever anything that I didn't like from him, so I'm very excited.
He's promising some good stuff, so he's promising that it'll be great and psychological and all that stuff, so can't wait.
Yeah. We shall see how it goes then. Is there anything...
And next gen, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Is there anything else you folks want to talk about before we begin to wrap?
No.
I just want to vent that my biggest pet peeve now is the Japanese counterparts of companies blaming the Western counterparts for the faults of the Japanese side.
Wait, what company could this be you're talking about? I have no idea.
Square that I'm talking about. But I think like Capcom might have been in this boat too. But like, I mean, the American headquarters, or the Western, I should say, headquarters of Square, have been busting their ass getting all these games out. They're the only things that's keeping that company afloat. And then the Japanese make statements like, oh, why didn't, you know, Tomb Raider sell this much? We need them. It's ridiculous. I can't. The state of the Japanese industry right now, I just don't understand.
Oh, you see, the thing is, it's a shame you can't just up and say, well, I'm not the one who had to start an MMO two times.
Yeah,
it's true. Or release, like, the same game three times.
Wait, which company are we talking about?
Square.
I was just making sure, because a lot of companies have released the same game three times.
You're talking about Final Fantasy 13.
Yeah.
I figured he was talking about that, but I was just thinking Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed. I mean...
No, he's talking about only three times, not eight times.
Exactly. And the shitty game three times. So.
Again, a lot of these things fall in the same.
I'd rather play another Call of Duty than another Final Fantasy 14.
But you see, I think the difference here, and I could be wrong, I didn't, is that I feel like it's because Final Fantasy has this benchmark quality that people associate it with it, where a lot of people just kind of have Call of Duty as like this middle ground, where it's like, okay, as long as it's decent online, I'll give it a pass. We've kind of mentioned this on the show before. The Japanese industry has kind of hurt this generation, and I think a lot of it has just done with them not trying to be Japanese anymore. Is a lot of it is just them chasing this Western. It's the same thing like the industry is doing. It's like everybody wants to chase that Call of Duty money instead of sticking to what makes them aesthetically Japanese. I mean, granted, yes, it doesn't always work, but. And, you know, there are certain elements of Japanese game development that people think are backwards or so, or needs to evolve, and that is something that they should seriously look into. But at the same time, I think, you know, trying to take a culture you don't understand and a game design you don't understand and trying to make it something you do doesn't work because you don't know how it works or why it works. You're just like, okay, this is what those people like, so let's try to do that game.
And they're confused in what they're trying to chase, because they should be trying to chase some Western mentality, such as their grasp on the internet, but they should be keeping their own design philosophy. However, with the design philosophy, they should also be actually putting out games. Apparently, they have nobody setting deadlines over in Japan, so they can keep The Last Guardian for like 8 years and keep Versus 13 for so many years, because nobody's saying, hey, you need to put these games out now, because you're losing money the more that it's not out.
Okay, I would just say that's not a fault of just necessarily the Japanese. I mean, because nobody... I mean, granted, probably because nobody wants it. Nobody says the same thing to Rockstar with Agent, and that's been just as long as Final Fantasy versus...
We have seen literally nothing of Agent apart from the logo, though.
Yeah. Which is even worse. I mean...
Well, not really, because at least then, like... At least they could be... At least we haven't... Like, Final Fantasy 13... Versus 13, there is a game there somewhere, whereas we don't know what Agent is. It could be anything.
And at this point, Earl, Agent might as well be cancelled. They are just not telling us.
Oh, I mean, I assume the same thing with the Asgardian in Final Fantasy Versus 13, but they keep on saying that they're in development. I don't know why. But yeah,
well, I think Versus 13 is definitely going to turn into something solid this E3, probably Final Fantasy 15 or something.
I heard the same thing last year, too, and I heard the same thing for the PlayStation, yeah. So we shall see.
Well, they need to do something, like, the end is approaching, so...
I'm not trying to absolve the Japanese game development scene. I'm just saying another thing people point at is like stuff that the West is going through as well. I think the major difference is that the Japanese doesn't really have a. I think because Japanese have so many distinctive companies that we know, like, you know, Capcom, Konami, you know, Square, and it's like, it's just those mega companies, and then there's really not much else. But a lot of the smaller companies, Atlus and Level 5 and stuff like that, do good work. And they do games that sell well, but it's, you know, it's not what you'd think as traditional Japanese companies, because they're not the Capcoms, the Squares, the Konamis, and stuff like that. And those titans are really just kind of stuck in the soup where they don't know what to do, and they continue to trip over themselves trying to do something they don't understand. We saw that with Final Fantasy, but I think Resident Evil 6, when it came out, we said that's kind of the epitome of Japanese development this generation, is that it's trying to be this Western game that doesn't understand why Westerners like these type of games, and it comes off much, much worse for it.
And on that happy note,
I was gonna say the other thing is that also the Japanese seem to be moving more and more towards the handheld, because just look at the 3DS output, that has been amazing for like the last year.
And look at the sales of the 3DS in Japan; they are phenomenal.
Yeah, the 3DS has become a powerhouse. Like every year now seems to be like the year of the 3DS. It's crazy.
Yeah, if you're in Japan, basically, 3DS is the main console there. Nothing comes close to it.
Not even the Vita.
I'm sorry. I don't want the return of draconian Nintendo, because that didn't work for anybody, and this is why they have such poor third party relations as it is. But if they could find some way, and I'm really surprised they haven't done this out of the gate, if they could find some way to kind of parlay the 3DS success with the Wii U, kind of like a synergy where like you can get these games and you can crossbreed them, like Monster Hunter does, in some fashion, like that has to help the system in some form, because
if
the 3DS is doing it.
Nintendo was smart. Monster Hunter 4, they should throw money at Capcom to make this also a game for the Wii U.
Yeah, and I understand why, but I think Dragon Quest X should have been a game that should have been a high priority for them to kind of get out in this window as well. Granted,
as well, yeah.
I mean in the West, because
probably.
It's one of those games that, granted, yeah, it's just an MMO, but, you know, it solves a lot of the problems that the Wii has. It's an RPG, it's an online game, which a lot of people still have this stigma Nintendo can't do online games, partially because they don't do online games, but... It does help, you know, and it's a big exclusive brand title from a brand that, you know, people kind of like in the West. It's no Final Fantasy, but it should have been something. But if we wanted to do a podcast on Nintendo's mistakes, we'd be here all weekend.
I look forward to the next Smash Brothers with online that actually is good.
I wouldn't.
Well, they can patch the games this time around.
Yeah, that's true.
That's Wii games. It was just really cumbersome to do.
Oh, yeah. No, it was terrible to have an online.
Well, it's somewhat a reasonable affair to go out about patching a game this time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, we shall see.
On the other hand, Smash Bros. Is also coming out on the 3DS, so who knows if it will even move Wii U's, at least in Japan.
It's announced. But,
okay.
I mean, it depends on what it is. If it's like Smash Bros., again, this is kind of going back to the, you know, strategy. If it's the same game on handheld and console, that's Sony dumb. That's, you know, like, here's a Vita game. But you can also get it on the PS3. But there's a Vita you can get it on the PS3. That's dumb. But if it's kind of like one's more of a 2D game and the other one's like 3D or 2.5D, as Smash Bros. Is or something. Like, two distinct games that can link up in some type of meaningful manner – like kind of like what is it, the Mario Sports games, where like the handheld games would always have like the RPG element. So if you kind of had like an RPG mode or some type of mode where you can raise your characters in the handheld game and bring them over to the home console version, they need to think of something, because I'm not gonna do something in 5 minutes, because you know I'm not thinking about this. But as a company, and Smash Brothers is what, their third or fourth biggest brand right now, they should be thinking of a way to make sure that this game, not only that this game sells consoles, but it's a way that it sells both consoles equally. Like, people are like, I need both versions of this game.
For Japan, even if they are different, I think the 3DS version will move way more units and not reuse at all, because just think about it. Online gaming is irrelevant in Japan, basically. And it's a four-player game, just like Monster Hunter or anything else. It's just perfect for them
I think it depends on, because we didn't talk about the Nintendo Direct last week because we didn't have a show, but I was thinking of something like Mario Party that they announced for the 3DS, and I'm like, I think there are certain games that I think are, even while they are local games, I think it's much better to play on a big screen instead of hoping that everybody brings over their own, you know, 3DS. And I think
it's a couch thing, isn't it? You put everyone on a couch and you have some drinks and you play Mario Party.
Yeah, and I think Smash Brothers, I mean, okay, granted, we don't know because we've never seen a Smash Brothers S game on, well, I guess we had PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, but we've never really seen a Smash Brothers game on a handheld, so.
Well, they've been the Jump Superstar games.
And how well have those sold?
In Japan, they were crazy about those games.
Yep. They were really good games.
Yeah, okay. They were. And I think if they make it, then I think they said that they were going to do this, but if they make it so Super Smash Bros. Players on 3DS can play with their Wii U friends, then that's great. That's all you really need. You're all sitting on the couch still. Just you get your own screen to yourself and your own set of buttons in your hand.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm thinking of, especially with Smash Bros., is it's not a game that you need your own screen for. Because it's not a game that is set up for, like, you're already screen watching. Like, there's no set. Like, usually you want your own screen either because you want your own space. You know, like a lot of co-op games, like the screen's kind of stuck because everybody has to remain on the same screen. Where if you do, you know, or
but,
you
but
want.
Smash Bros. Is also a game you can play online pretty successfully, whereas you wouldn't have the same thing with Mario Party.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but I'm just saying, we don't know. I'm just saying that I think Smash Brothers can work either way. I think it's going to depend on what Nintendo has up their sleeves for this franchise.
I guess that's something we will learn at E3 as well.
Yes. There's a lot there in at E3, but we'll save that. Speaking of E3, I have this written down somewhere. I believe next week? Or the week after starts our E3 schedule. Yes, the week after. Because we like to do our pre-E3 shows during the month of May to kind of give us a catch-up. Next week is just a normal show, but starting May 13th, we're going to start with E3 third parties. May 20th is Nintendo, because going into E3, they're the ones we know the most about right now. May 27th works out just well. It's the weekend after Microsoft's big press event.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, that's great timing.
And June 3rd is Sony. And then June 10th, which is the weekend before, we'll do our final recap and prediction show. So that's stuff to look forward to in the month of May as we count down to E3, the Super Bowl, you know, video games, I hear.
Exciting stuff.
Well, it depends, because if you listen, depending on who you listen to, the Super Bowl for video games may not be around much longer. I'm not advising you listen to those people, but if you do listen to them.
Well, I will say this much, and I know not everybody's going to agree with me, is that I think the Super Bowl of gaming is more and more moving towards the VGAs.
Oh my God.
I know, but the VGAs is this huge spectacle. It's this huge event. It's kind of where, like, we're getting a lot more game announcements moving towards there. And I think it makes sense because it's right after the Christmas holidays, so people kind of had their.
And not only that, is the Spike TV pay for that? Here's a wad of cash, give us your game announcement.
Yeah, and it reaches a much wider audience in general.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I know it's not that. It's not something we want to hear because the VGAs suck as an award show, but it is moving more and more towards that's where you kind of do your thing because it kicks off the new year and it kicks off that hype cycle. So
it has the potential to be good. They just need to get away from all the I'm Sam Jackson, bitch, and
they just need to not be sponsored by or shown by Spike TV. Everything that makes it popular needs to go away, basically.
That defeats the purpose, though. But yes, that's a discussion we'll have in December, as we always do. So
I would love to see them give awards to, like, I don't know, you know, programmers.
They deserve them.
Yeah, and like have them come up and say a few words, and like show the actual voice actor awards, and stop nominating celebrities. Like I love Emma Stone as much as the next guy, but she was barely in Sleeping Dogs, and they had her as a nominee for that award. I was like, what?
Wait, are you kidding me?
From what I heard, he also sucked in Sleeping Dogs. So
yeah, she wasn't very good in it. But
I was going to say, I hope they show the awards. That was always my biggest problem. They show like 5 awards in 2 hours. And usually it's the really crappy ones, and the people get like a minute to speak, and then it's hype, hype, hype. Like, again, I don't mind the hype. I don't mind the previews.
Wait, hang on. So Emma Stone got nominated for an award because she played as one person, one of the few people you can go out with a date with one time in the game.
Exactly, yeah.
And not
she was up against, like, Jennifer Hale, who does, you know, Commander Shepard and actual voice actors. And I was appalled by that, yeah.
Ah, dear. And not Lucy Liu, who had more of a part than this one. Oh, dear.
Emma Stone, yeah. Yeah, and there are other I forget the other celebrities that were, like, Alien Games that were also nominated, but, yeah, that happens.
Okay, Terry.
Okay. So, yes, I want to thank Phil for joining us. For Martin, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 107.
We have always so nice endings.
When you get hold of the Nintendo Entertainment System, when you master Rob the video robot and meet the challenge of Gyromite, when you shoot the light-sensing zapper, when you play the system with the most arcade hits, you're playing with power. The Nintendo Entertainment System. Now you're playing with power.